If this man can do this, I can do anything. If this man can win over the world and change everyone's cynical perspectives and accomplish what most of us thought was not even in the realm of possibility, then I can get up and start my new gig. I can get up and start a new life. I can get up and change how I see things.
ESPNW presents Be Honest with Carrie Champion.
8 years ago, I arguably was going through the most difficult period in my life. I was working at WGCL in Atlanta, and I was fired, and then I was hired, and then I decided to leave. Fired because they thought I said something on air I didn't say. Then they had to rehire me when they realized they didn't say it, and then they treated me like crap, for lack of a better word. Management isn't there anymore, so it's not the same people. So it was really difficult circumstances, really hard to want to be in that situation. I moved back to LA and I said, you know, I'm going to take control of my life. I'm going to leave local news. I'm going to find a new career path, a new trajectory. What can I do? And I bounced around from gig to gig. I was a freelancer. I was an out of work local news reporter slash anchor. And I was looking for some sort of hope. But all the while, in the background of what was my life, the background, because I couldn't really focus on it, was the presidential election, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama for me, because those were the two that I was going to vote for, one of the two. And the idea of having a black president just didn't seem real for so long. And I was one of the naysayers, one of those who thought, no way, this ain't gonna happen, not in my lifetime, not in my kid's lifetime, not in their kid's lifetime. It will not happen. And again, you have to understand, he took over in a time in which this country was going through what I thought was a severe recession. Mostly everyone I knew did not have a job, a full-time job, myself included. And times were extremely hard. And I didn't have any hope. But one day, I was watching a press conference. And you all might remember that press conference. And it was when Barack Obama had to talk about being black and white. It was when he had to defend his religion because his then pastor talked really bad about him, made it seem like he was a quote unquote a sellout. So the time had come. He had ran this election pretty clean. He talked about race, but not in any exact terms. It never was really, for lack of a better term, black and white. And he laid it on the table. My mom's white. My dad's black. I grew up in a community that was X, Y, and Z. I'm this person. And yes, I am that person. And he was so honest and so real. And for the very first time, I saw a president. I saw a black man that I could relate to. I saw a person that I could relate to, regardless of color. And at that moment, I said, he's going to be president. This made sense. I felt it. It was almost like it, you know, you think back on history when they are the first to break certain barriers. They had to be the first. Like Jackie Robinson had to be the first because of what he endured. Hank Aaron had to be the first because of what he endured. I just think of all the different firsts. You know what? The Williams sisters, Venus and Serena, had to be the first. Just the way that it plays out. You look back and you think it only had to be them. And for a black president to come in and run this country and captivate everyone of all different walks of life, you know that it was an ordained position. And by that I mean he had to be able to speak to everyone. He had to be able to relate to everyone. And he had to win over, sad to say, the black community, because we are skeptics. We just didn't believe. It was too good to be true. A lot of black folks deal with racism day in and day out. And so the thought that the world, and by world I mean from East Coast to West Coast and everything in the middle, because that's the real unclear part, middle America says, yes, we love you. Those who live in that middle part of the country say, yes, I believe in you. We didn't think it could happen. We believed, but did everybody else? So I'm sitting on my couch. I remember it like it was yesterday. And like I told you, times are hard. I didn't have a job. I was in between gigs. And I really didn't know what I was going to do. And I sat there and I watched this man get elected president. And of course I cried. I don't know anybody who didn't. And then, as I mentioned, I had no hope, but I felt so hopeful. At that moment, everything changed. I got up, I went to my office, I wrote a letter to myself, I put a vision board together, and I said, if this man can do this, I can do anything. If this man can win over the world and change everyone's cynical perspectives and accomplish what most of us thought was not even in the realm of possibility, then I can get up and start my new gig. I can get up and start a new life. I can get up and change how I see things. The inspiration that I felt, the hope that I felt, the new life that I felt, that's a rare feeling as an adult. It just is. I was like a newborn child, a happy toddler. Now the toddlers just run around and laugh, and then they play and they're giggling, and they have that laugh. I like to say that no bill laugh, that laugh when you don't have to pay no bills, everything taken care. Yeah, okay. They had that laugh, and I felt that joy. I felt that laugh. Although I was mired in like debt and didn't know what I was going to do, but I felt this new joy. And I'm not saying his presidency put me on my current career path and my life path, but I will tell you that watching him and his family represent all that I knew existed, represent things that I've seen before, and for America to see it and celebrate it made me feel so inspired to want to change the world, literally change the world. Do something different. Make an impact. Be one of the first. It gives me chills just to think about it. I taped the inauguration. I couldn't go. I talked to friends who were there. It was just really something special. And I'm grateful that I was alive and had the right mind and well enough to share this story with my children's 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 and pass down these messages because it was special. It was undescribable. It's just the feeling that you have to get. So we fast forward 8 years later. And that hopeful feeling that I have is no longer there. If I'm honest, it's the exact opposite. Let me tell you my story about Donald Trump. No, I didn't vote for him. I thought that a lot of what he did was entertainment. I felt like he really didn't want to be president. I felt like he woke up one day and thought this would be a good idea to help his businesses. And then he realized, oh, shit, this could actually happen. I could actually be president. Oh, shit, I'm president. Now what do I do? A lot of folks take issue with the way he treated women and what he seemingly says about minorities and different classes and cultures. But true story, never talked about this. When I was a reporter in West Palm Beach, Florida, from 2004 to 2007, I covered Donald Trump. This is when The Apprentice was a big deal, and he did the you're fired thing with his fingers, and everybody loved him. He has this beautiful, beautiful palatial estate in Palm Beach, Florida. And he allowed me, as a local news reporter, to come interview him with my cameraman on many occasions, because we were the NBC station that carried the actual show. And every time I met him, he was polite. He was kind. He was generous. He was charming. He was never inappropriate. I never felt like he was looking me up and down and thought, let me grab her by thee. He, in fact, would often invite me and my family to come back to Mar-a-Lago because it was a place where people would visit. And it had a spa, and it was like one of the most elaborate places in town. And he would often say, hey, come back. How are you? Come visit us. I had turnkey access to this man's estate. I met his wife, his then girlfriend. His children were always there. They would have parties there. I remember Diddy had a party there. Russell, it's so interesting, all the people who don't like him anymore. Russell had a party there. He would talk. Russell Simmons was there. I mean, he had all these different people there. Diddy was there. There was so many people there that I can't stand him now, that don't mess with him no more, but they were at the house. I remember it like it was yesterday, which is why I find it so odd that he ran on such a hateful platform, such a divisive platform. Because in my mind, I thought, who is this man? That's not the man that would say, hey, Carrie, come hang out. Bring your family anytime you want. Dinner's on me. This is on us. Enjoy yourself. And it wasn't because I was a part of mainstream media. You have to understand, I worked at a small local TV station. He wasn't worried about my local self He had other networks coming to talk to him. Barbara Walters would come. You know, there were people of note interviewing him. My local self wasn't a concern. So for the first, I don't know, it took me a while to reconcile the man that I knew, who was so generous to me, to the man who disrespects John Lewis, to the man who wants to build a wall, to the man who goes on Twitter rants instead of is concerned about what's going on with our country. I don't know either, if I'm honest. But here's the truth. He's our president. Not my president. He's our president. And we have to get behind him in terms of dealing with what it is. No, you don't have to go to the inauguration. No, you don't have to support everything he says, but we can't divide this country. President Obama said it best. We have to support this man. We can't divide the world that we live in based on the fact that he's not smart or he said things that may have offended you. It is so hard for me to say that because I'm the kind of person that's extremely vengeful when it comes to these type of things. Like if he was on fire, I'd debate if I should get some water. Kidding. But we do have to support him. And I don't know what that looks like for you. In fact, I don't know what it even looks like for me. I don't know what this country is going to look like a year from now. But the truth is, I'm not feeling inspired. I'm not feeling hopeful. But it's my duty as a citizen to support. I don't know what that means. I'll get back to you if you seem to ask me. But I never thought that I could have such extreme feelings of joy, inspiration, new life to not joy, no inspiration, and I don't know about life. It's not that dramatic. The world's not coming to an end. But we don't normally see the lasting effects of people who have such extreme vision until years later. And what I mean by that, no matter what he's trying to implement, we won't really know how it will affect us, our kids' kids. Like, we just don't get it. And for that, that's why I'm not hopeful. That's why I'm a little concerned about this man and who he is. I'm going to end on this. This was a podcast saying goodbye to Obama. Hello to what's new. But more importantly, I just wanted to share what that man meant to me and to so many Americans and people across the country, across the world for that matter. He meant a lot. Knowing that he will no longer be our president makes me really sad. But we've survived more. On the other side of the break, my producer, Delina Turman, little brown girl to many of you, will share a letter that she wrote the night President Obama was elected president. Welcome back to Be Honest. We're saying goodbye to the president. We love you. Barry, we love you. We love you, Barack. It's interesting. We were all in our separate situations when he was elected. But everyone remembers where they were. I want you to take a moment to think back where you were, what you were doing when President Obama was elected. When Barack Obama became president of the United States, what were you doing? Where were you watching the results? Where were you when he was inaugurated? Were you there at the inauguration? What were you thinking? Were you glued to the television? There are just these moments that you remember and that you never forget. Never forget. That man made me go and write a letter to myself after I watched him become president of the United States. And to that end, I wasn't the only one. I wasn't the only one moved to put pen to paper and document the moment, the historical moment. Here's my producer, Delina Turman, a letter she wrote to her children when Barack Obama became the president of the United States.
A letter to my children. I'm writing this to you with the hope that one day you'll ask me, Mommy, where were you? What were you doing? I'm writing this to you so that I can then reply, I was in the greatest city in the world. I was where he was. Where he was. Where we were. Exactly 3 weeks before marked the date of my 21st birthday, My senior year in college was really beginning to have a hold on me, and 21 already seemed more trying than 20. The year that I spent frolicking around the European continent, living in a different city every 3 months, and playing harder than I worked was over. 21 was different. Something had been shaking at me for 3 weeks now, saying, wake up, snap out of it. This is reality. But what was my reality? That in just a few months I would be graduating from Northwestern University, that I needed a job, that God was calling on me and I had been beating around the bush? This last reality, although the harshest, seemed to be the truest. I was allowing myself to get as down as the weather, debating with classmates why a Republican ideology might be just what our economy needs to keep the world turning, why John McCain wasn't so bad, and why, for some reason, I was wavering on Proposition 8, the proposition in California to ban gay marriage. Then around about Sunday, I stopped beating and started walking straight. I decided a long time ago that I supported Barack Obama. I voted for him on that Friday, October 31st, and I would stick by him. Anything I ever achieved, I only got because I believed it was mine. On Monday, November 3rd, a black woman named Beverly, whose Jamaican accent reminds me of my grandmother's, asked me if I thought he was going to win. I had spent the previous weeks and months talking about why he might not, but at that moment I stopped. I stopped beating around the bush and started thinking straight. I replied, you know what? I really do. Sometimes you have to speak things into existence, and I think it's my duty as a Barack Obama supporter to believe that he will win. Wearing a pin or changing my Facebook status was not the same as giving life to the words and embodying the purpose. On Tuesday, November 4th, I woke up ready. I put imaginary wings on my back and prayed that this would be the day we fly. At the present moment, I'm still unsure of what I mean by we. You see, growing up in Los Angeles and living in Chicago, two of America's most segregated cities, we has always been one-dimensional. When I say we, it always meant women, my family, black people, maybe young people, but surely not people. Surely not multiple communities of people with multiple beliefs, sexual orientations, and religions. But from the moment I walked outside, I had a feeling all of that would change. In November in Chicago, the sun was shining and the atmosphere was painted yellow with an abundance of fresh foliage. Warmth traveled across Lake Michigan shores to my doorstep and my wings began to flutter, but a voice whispered to me, not yet. The day carried on like any other busy day, class, a quiz, a meeting, and more class. I do remember, however, everyone being unusually nice. Free Starbucks for those who voted and being let out of class an hour and a half early. I felt good. Later that night, I would travel to Chicago's Hyde Park with my first friends I ever made at Northwestern, Ramita, Courtney, and Jenna. Jenna and I were assigned to photograph the election, and Ramita and Courtney came along for the ride. On our way, we passed some of Chicago's last standing housing projects on State Street with police officers dressed in black uniforms and bulletproof vests posted outside the metal entrance doors. It quickly reminded me that people still live that way, especially in Chicago. But something also told me that the televisions were blaring within these homes and hope, one last breath of it, covered the brick project walls. The girls and I stumbled across an ABC 7 party at Room 43 on 43rd and Greenwood on Chicago's South Side, blaring Young Jeezy's My President is Black the entire way there. As we entered the gathering, well-dressed, beautiful black people filled the room and had their eyes fixed on the projection screen. I attempted to capture pictures and interview attendants, but really, I just wanted to immerse myself with the other observers. I was so proud. Black never looked so beautiful, smelled so good, or smiled so much. Each time Senator Obama won another electoral vote, another cheer resounded across the venue. We laughed and yelled, ate and gossiped, just like we always do. But something was missing. For the first time, I saw my people doing all of this, being ourselves without the usual pain, without the usual disposition. Oh yeah, change was coming. Just as Obama was at 207 electoral votes, we decided to make our way to the second venue before it got too late. We were on our way to Bar Louie in Hyde Park, blaring Jeezy once again. I loved that bar because the people and atmosphere remind me of my favorite movie, Love Jones. It's one of the few places in Chicago that convinces me that black love, intellectualism, and pure fun exist outside of that movie. As we pulled in front of Bar Louie, pressed to find a parking spot as always, a woman in the parking lot was talking to her girlfriend on her cell phone, exclaiming, "It's over!" The girls and I were not sure what she meant, but as we entered Bar Louie, we immediately found out. Across the television screens, the CNN, ABC, and NBC headlines read, "Barack Obama wins presidential race." We screamed. I tried to wake up from this perfect dream, but it was all so real. So unbelievably real that it was so real. We took a seat at a table and watched the excitement of more of our people as we witnessed and made history together. Tears hadn't started streaming yet. That is, until Barack Obama and that beautiful family of his walked out. I promised myself at that moment that my family would one day be just as beautiful, just as regal, and make someone in the world just as proud. I meant every tear that streamed down my face, and for the first time ever, I understood what they mean by tears of joy. The purest form of happiness streamed from my soul onto the flesh of my cheek. Thank you, God. Thank you, Jesus, is all I could say. This was real, and I was there. I was chosen to be alive for this and cherish this, share it, embody it. Love filled the air of the city I'd already fallen in love with. I caught a Jones, though, for the millions of people within it. The hundreds of thousands gathered at Grant Park, the thousands across the way in the projects, the thousands up the lake at the best university, and the millions in my past who died for this day to be possible. Thank you to my ancestors for allowing me to inherit the best legacy any race of people could ever have. So where was I? I was there. Right there. But that's not important. What is that we were there. Even you. Because the possibility of you and faith I have planted in you was fertilized on that Tuesday night. We were there. All of us. When I woke up the next morning, I let out a cry, bringing forth more of those tears of joy. I guess this is what Martin meant when he said he had a dream.